Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, March 20th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Opposition MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai says the United States should remove the sanctions it imposed against President Robert Mugabe and members of his inner circle in 2002.
You know, there are some people who will even blame lack of having children on sanctions. And you get those kind of silly excuses. I've always said that there is no sanctions regime.
But U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton says the so-called targeted measures will remain in place until democracy prevails in the country.
We are concerned about the state of democracy. We are concerned about observation of the rule of law. And until those basic conditions are met on which Zimbabwe's economy can grow, sanctions are likely to remain in place.
And barely 24 hours after arriving back in Harare from a seminar in Japan, President Mugabe flies out again, this time for the inauguration of Namibian President Hage Geingob tomorrow. Opposition MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai says the United States should remove the so-called targeted measures imposed against President Robert Mugabe and members of his inner circle in 2002, following what the West said were rigged elections. Mr. Tsvangirai argues that President Mugabe's ZANU-PF party is using the sanctions as an excuse to cover up for its failures. The opposition leader who is visiting the United States told Studio 7 that keeping the sanctions in place will only serve as a propaganda tool for Mr. Mugabe and his allies. U.S. President Barack Obama this month said the sanctions will remain in place, citing some people within the ZANU-PF government, he said, pose an unusual and extraordinary threat to the foreign policy of the United States. But Mr. Tsvangirai thinks the U.S. government is making a mistake by keeping the sanctions. He spoke with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
We've all agreed. When I was prime minister, we went around the world, United States, Europe, everywhere to say the sanctions regime, which was largely a targeted tribal ban, was not helping the country and was not having the necessary effect. Because when you put in a sanctions regime, you're supposed to be creating incentives for good behavior. And Mugabe was committing violence against his own people, committing atrocities. And that's what we wanted to contain. Unfortunately, at the end, no one has listened to the fact that the sanctions regime must be removed, if there are any, including travel bans. There are two approaches. The United States mandate had a hardline position. The Europeans have relaxed it. But they have said that the travel ban will still retain on the president and his wife. But everyone else has been removed. So as far as I'm concerned, sanctions must never be used as an excuse for the failure of policy and failure of economic and political policy in the country. And that's why, for us, removing these things will actually create conditions where ZANU-PF has no excuse whatsoever. You know, there are some people who will even blame lack of having children on sanctions. And you get those kind of silly excuses. I've always said that there is no sanctions regime. What has happened is that people have been banned from going to Europe. It's a travel ban. What has got travel ban to do with the economic destruction that ZANU-PF has overseen over the last 35 years? What has that got to do with debt overhang? It has got to do with the economic comatose. What has that got to do with destruction of industry, destruction of lack of foreign direct investment? What has that got to do with sanctions? If there was a really effective sanctions regime, we wouldn't be talking of an economy there.
Going back to the economy, there are some people listening out there right now, and they are saying, okay, what can Mr. Tsvangirai and the MDCT promise us as Zimbabweans? What are you putting in place as the government in waiting, so to speak, for those people that are suffering, that are out there?
Well, first of all, there is anxiety about finding a solution. Our problem has never been economic.
Mm-hmm.
Our problem has always been political. Look what happened when the government of national unity was put in place. We stabilized the economy. We invested in all the social sectors, education and health, water, sanitation, housing. All the indicators were all indicating to a positive growth in the economy. So what we are capable of doing has already been demonstrated. We don't have to demonstrate anything beyond what we have already done in the inclusive government. What is needed is a review of policies that have destroyed the confidence in that economy. What is needed is to have foreign direct investment in the economy, encourage local investment. Mm-hmm. Some people cannot put their money in the country because they don't have confidence in that economy.
And also right now, you know, the whole country is focusing on the disappearance of Itai Dzamara. And you just shared that you disappeared for a couple of weeks. What was that experience like for you? And then also comment on the disappearance of Dzamara. What does it
for
mean?
For me, the fact that you can go a day without your family knowing where you are is very traumatic. I remember the first time I was then called to the police station to meet my wife. We couldn't actually recognize each other because we're all traumatized. So I know the feeling. I know the impact in their family, and I know the impact to the whole nation. No one should disappear in a country which is supposed to be civilized. It is barbaric, it is obnoxious, and the sooner the police or the state has a responsibility of delivering Itai alive or dead. At least it's better to have some finality, but hopefully alive.
That was Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, speaking in an interview with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye in Washington, D.C. Responding, United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton said the sanctions imposed on President Robert Mugabe and members of his inner circle 12 years ago over election rigging and rights abuses allegations will remain in place until there's democracy in the country. The ambassador tells Studio 7's Gibbs Duwe the U.S. is also worried about the recent alleged abduction of Occupy Africa Unity Square leader Itai Dzamara, who was calling for President Robert Mugabe's resignation. But he adds that what is more worrying for ordinary Zimbabweans is the fact that all top political parties in the country are currently fighting for power at the expense of the long-suffering masses.
It seems to me that all of the political parties are involved, sort of consumed by internal issues right now. And I think that it's the people who are being shortchanged in terms of ideas for how to really get the economy going, how to strengthen social institutions, and how to implement the new constitution and realize the promise that that offers to Zimbabwe.
When we look at the abduction of Itai Dzamara and the situation where some MTC supporters were recently beaten up by the police, what can be your comment on some of these issues?
I'm very concerned about the disappearance of Mr. Dzamara. We do not know who abducted him, simply don't know. But we stood up and said, look, this is a matter of concern. I'll tell you that I was very pleased to hear Vice President Mnangagwa and Police Commissioner Chiuri and others stand up and say, yeah, this is a problem. We need to figure out where this young man is and return him to his family. He has a right as a citizen of Zimbabwe to express himself, to demonstrate peacefully, and we remain concerned about where he is and his condition.
President Robert Mugabe has accused America of trying to effect a regime change in Zimbabwe. What do you think about these accusations?
Policy interest in Zimbabwe is to help the people of Zimbabwe create a strong democracy, a prosperous economy, and a nation that's able to meet its social needs. We think that those things are in Zimbabwe's interest, and frankly, they serve American interests well at the same time.
Finally, former Zimbabwe Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai yesterday here at the studios urged the U.S. government to remove the sanctions imposed against President Mugabe and his colleagues. What are your views on those kind of remarks?
You know, I certainly respect the rights of Zimbabweans to speak out and to make their opinions known. You know, our position is that the reason for imposition of the travel restrictions and the business restrictions 12 years ago are very clear. We are concerned about the state of democracy. We are concerned about observation of the rule of law. We were just concerned about the economic consequences of some of the policies here. So we are ready to sit down and talk about those things at any time. But I think that until those basic conditions are met on which Zimbabwe's economy can grow, sanctions are likely to remain in place.
Are these sanctions having any intended effect? If yes, how?
you know, the fact that the elections in 2013 were peaceful, I think, was a reflection of broad international concern about what had happened in 2002 and 2008. I think that international pressure, whether those the U.S. visa restrictions and business restrictions or static concerns or AU concerns or European concerns, I think they have had a positive effect in Zimbabwe.
Bruce Watson is the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe. He spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Binga, Matabeleland North Province. Mr. Watson will tomorrow speak to Studio 7 about various projects his government is funding in Zimbabwe. Meanwhile, the decision by President Obama to maintain the targeted measures on Zimbabwe has come under heavy criticism from some U.S. residents. Among them is Obi Egbuna Jr., who is the U.S.-based member of the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association and the Washington correspondent for the Herald newspaper in Zimbabwe. Egbuna Jr. tells Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele that he did not expect Mr. Obama to reverse the sanctions.
Actually, President Obama has done a masterful job of making people believe that he's for change, but he's really for maintenance. And overall, but specifically in relationship to this policy, he is just as committed to a regime change in Zimbabwe as George W. Bush was. And history obligates us to fight him tooth and nail.
The U.S. just recently announced an extension of those sanctions in Zimbabwe under the fact that democracy at its fullest has still not been achieved. And as we speak right now, Itai Dzamara, who's really kind of sparked the debate again about how democratic is Zimbabwe in terms of its human rights practices. So in light of that, and
that
also, of course, the fact that there have been a lot of abuses against journalists, against civil society.
Well, let me take the journalist question first. The Standard is an anti-government newspaper. The Zimbabwe Independent is an anti-government newspaper. The Financial Gazette is an anti-government newspaper. Newsday is an anti-government newspaper. And all those newspapers are allowed to function.
Can that not be considered a counter to the Herald and, say, the ZBC, which, at the end of the day, also just spewed government position?
I would say that that's a room of interpretation. But if we're going to go by the Washington Post, what they do every year, the 10 World's Worst Dictators, and they give you this impression of dictatorship in Zimbabwe, then those newspapers wouldn't exist in the first place. Those civil society groups wouldn't exist in the first place. And an opposition party, which everybody knows was financed by the United States and Britain, wouldn't exist in the first place. I think that once MDC became part of the inclusive government, that nullified all the rhetoric about democracy, and when we saw the bankrolling of all those civil society groups, 400 to be exact. When you see how the United States Agency for International Development has functioned in Harare and how citizens are openly working with those groups and are not in any fear of their lives, I think that nullifies anything that any people try to say to continue to peddle the falsehoods that you're talking about.
Obi Egbuna Jr. is the Washington correspondent for the the Herald newspaper in Zimbabwe and also a member of the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association. Egbuna has compiled a CD championing President Mugabe's policy and speaking out against Western imposition on Zimbabwe. More on that next week. Barely 24 hours after arriving back in Harare from a seminar in Japan, President Mugabe flew out again this afternoon for the inauguration of Namibian President Hage Geingob tomorrow. Mr. Mugabe is attending the ceremony first and foremost in his capacity as SADC chairman. He's also the leader of the African Union. A few weeks ago, the 91-year-old arrived back from Singapore and flew out to Zambia within hours. Critics say, given his advanced age, Mr. Mugabe should take things a bit slowly and not burden himself with a busy schedule that may not augur well for his health. One such critic is analyst Blessing Vava.
I don't think it's very much surprising that President Mugabe has been gallivanting from one capital to the other. It's really not surprising at all, considering that President Mugabe now, he is a man at an advanced age. He has reached retirement age. And we know that when someone has reached retirement age, he wants to spend most of his time on holiday. This is exactly what President Mugabe has been doing of late.
Of course, Mr. Mugabe is in Namibia in his capacity as SADC chairman, first of all. But was it not possible for him to delegate somebody?
Well, the problem with dictators is that they don't think that there's anyone who can lead or anyone who can represent them on their behalf. They think that only them alone are the ones that can be able to represent their countries. If you look at the history of President Mugabe, he is the only head of state who has not missed a SADC meeting since his formation. He has not missed an African Union meeting. He's one leader who has not missed any session of the United Nations. Whereas some leaders, when there are some issues that are pressing back home, they tend to send representatives, vice presidents or prime ministers or some ministers of some sort. But we've realized and we've seen that President Mugabe is one person who wants everything for himself.
That was political analyst Blessing Vava on the line with Studio 7 from Johannesburg. In news,
you are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
In news, I just received MDC Ncube spokesman Nhlanhla Dube has quit the party, saying it's time to move on and explore other opportunities. Mr. Dube's departure comes at a time when the MDC is said to be riven by infighting over positions ahead of the party's reunification with the MDC renewal. Tune in tomorrow for a full report and an interview with Mr. Dube. Coming up, the Banana family says it's not bitter with President Robert Mugabe and ZANU-PF. But first, a look at regional and international news. Reuters says its news website has become inaccessible in mainland China in what appears to be the latest effort by Beijing to block Western media outlets. U.S. President Barack Obama has told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu he will reassess aspects of the U.S.-Israeli relationship after the Israeli leader's comments rejecting the two-state solution. And at least 11 people have died in the Nigerian border town of Gomboru in an apparent attack by the Boko Haram militant group, which had ceded this territory to Cameroonian forces a few weeks ago. A son of the late former Zimbabwean President Kenan Banana says his family has nothing against President Robert Mugabe, even though he says former First Lady Janet Banana is now being looked after by the British government. Nathan Sipho Banana, who is operating businesses in Zimbabwe, says his family has not begrudged Mr. Mugabe for allowing his government's incarceration of the country's first black president. Banana also tells Studio 7 Skips Dube his father's incarceration shocked the whole family and remains a dark shadow that has almost obliterated the good works he did before and after independence.
My mom is in the UK. She's resident there. She's basically, there have been issues obviously because of my dad's controversial case a couple of years back. Things did not go through after People were saying nasty things. She had threats left, right, and center. So her family actually advised her that maybe it's best that you come out of Zim for a while and then see what happens. And since then, she just hasn't had the courage to go back. There's a few issues, obviously, in terms of red tape within her rights as a former first lady, which I obviously can't go into detail with at this particular time.
But is she getting any benefits?
No, she's not. She's being looked after basically by the British system.
We know that there were certain issues that were related to your dad. How do you relate to the stigma regarding the memory of your father in his last days? It was not even in good books with the president, on these issues concerning homosexuality and others.
It was a very difficult time for the whole family at the time, because all of us were shocked as well. And the thing is that once, in Africa, when you have a political figure, it's hard to rule out anything. According to what he told me personally, he told me a different story. What I've read in the papers is just like what everybody else has read. It was really hard, but, we need to move on. Sadly, that particular issue tainted his career record. And a lot of good things that he did are now almost unknown. I mean, the banana name has been kind of erased from Zimbabwe's memory. Only those people who knew him personally and who knew his work as an individual and as a head of state still can appreciate his contribution to Zimbabwe.
So you're saying he told you something about some of these issues. What is that, Mr. Panan?
He just said that he thought that it was because of his because he was trying, see what happened in 1987, he was involved in the unification of ZAPU and ZANU, and after that he retired. And later on, in 2000, there was also now differences between ZANU and MDC. So he was talking to both sides, and he feels maybe the way he was for his relationship with MDC people could have created some form of victimization from the current party. But, that's all based on his own speculation. I don't have the facts. I mean, the story around that, you'd need to speak directly with the individual. Unfortunately, he's not here.
So, but are you thinking of writing a book to tell the nation who the late President Kenan Banana was?
There are some colleagues from the University of Zimbabwe who had started writing a book on his legacy. Yeah, there will be something coming up in the near future.
What do you think about Zimbabwe's leaders right now? Let's say, for example, Mr. Robert Mugabe. We know that your father and Mr. Mugabe were at one stage, rapping shoulders every day, and their kids were almost doing the same. So what is your opinion of the president?
I have nothing against the president.
That was Nathan Sipho Banana, the son of Zimbabwe's first post-independence president, the late Kenan Sodindo Banana. He was speaking there with Studio 7 from Harare. The late Banana, who was a non-executive president and left office before the formation of a unity government set up through the merger of then bitter political rivals PF ZAPU, led by Joshua Nkomo, and Mr. Mugabe's ZANU-PF in 1997, served 8 months of a 10-year sentence after he was accused of sodomizing his aides. He pleaded not guilty to 11 charges of sodomy and related issues. And coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
With an estimated 21 million people around the world victimized by human trafficking, the United States is fully engaged in combating what President Obama has called one of the great human rights causes of our time, modern-day slavery. Every year, the Department of State releases a comprehensive report on governmental anti-human trafficking efforts. It tracks global trends in 188 countries, including law enforcement, victim identification, and protection and prevention efforts. We have stepped up efforts to combat human trafficking abroad and in the United States, where many unwitting victims are brought. On December 11th, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security announced it had partnered with one of the nation's largest highway travel center operators to train its employees to look for signs of people being transported against their will in this country and to notify the proper authorities. Travel Centers of America will provide DHS training and awareness materials, including posters, handouts, and a public service announcement, to over 250 locations and more than 15,000 employees across the United States. These materials will help Travel Centers of America personnel and customers to identify and recognize indicators of human trafficking, as well as provide information on how to report suspected cases. Victims often find themselves in a foreign country where they can't speak the language. In addition, traffickers frequently take away the victim's travel and identity documents, telling them that if they attempt to escape, they or their families back home will be harmed, or that their families will assume the debt. Travel Centers of America's involvement in the trucking industry makes it a critical partner in the fight against human trafficking. Truck drivers who know potential indicators of human trafficking and how to report it can provide eyes and ears all around the country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news, the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League season kicked off with a shock as newly promoted Cholocho Pirates, the only team in the PSL coached by a female, beat preseason favorites Harare City 1-0 at Rufaro Stadium this afternoon. More from Michael Cariati.
The 2015 Premier Soccer League season rolled into life this afternoon with a shock 1-0 defeat of seasoned campaigner Harare City to newly promoted Cholocho Pirates at Rufaro Stadium. The game was supposed to have been played tomorrow on the official opening day of the season, but had to be brought back because of the Young Warriors' engagement in an All-Africa Games qualifier against Cameroon at the same venue Sunday. A lot has happened during the off-season, with coaches and players changing teams, and tomorrow, the Castle Lager Premier Soccer League program officially kicks off, with all the teams looking forward to a perfect start. All the top three teams, Capes United, Dynamos and Islanders, as well as Harare City, have new coaches. The league is also welcoming four new players, Flame Lily, Dongoso Mills, Wange Prisons, and Harare City Conquerors, Cholocho Pirates. Premier Soccer League Chief Executive Officer Kenneth Ndebele tells us whom they are going to meet in their first games in Premiership football.
On Saturday, we have FC Platinum versus Dongo at Mandala Stadium, Chigelin versus Flame Lily at Lupepe Stadium, Dynamos versus Buffalo's National Sports Stadium, ZPC Kariba versus Highlanders at Kwanzura Stadium. Then on Sunday, we have Triangle versus Wanget Gibo, Haumine versus Chapungu River Stadium, Wawa versus Capes United at Ascot Stadium.
Dynamos are the defending champions and have won the title since the Castle Lager came on board to sponsor the tournament in 2011. All Dynamos 4 league titles were won under Calisto Pasua, and his departure has put a lot of pressure on those in charge. But assistant coach Tondera Indiraya says pressure is nothing new at Dimbare.
90% of our time has been planned for the new season, and I must say that we've since done that.
Pressure too is on Bongani Mafu at Highlanders. The Bulawayo Giants finished a disappointing fifth last season, but Mafu is more focused on his first game against ZPC Kariba and not on the league title.
We are going to go out there and try to win the match. We know we are playing a team that came second in the Premier League last season. We are going to give it our best.
Capes United, along with Dynamos, Highlanders and Harare City, are among the favourites for the championship. However, Capes United coach Mark Harrison is attempting to deceive by claiming he is not going for the title but building a strong team for the future.
This is about a process, but it might happen in 12, it might happen in 36 months, I don't know. I can't guarantee that at the moment.
But Chicken Inn coach Joey Antipas is not into those tricks. He is straight to the point, saying he has built a team strong enough to challenge for the title.
I believe that we've got a competitive side and we'll give quite a few teams problems.
While Chicken Inn are in their best of shape for the season, the same cannot be said of Haumine, who finished 8th last season. Coach Luke Masomere explains why.
Chikafa is still injured, as well as Mparati, Kotifungo Zao. Then we have Mosi Gutu and Heriten Masuku. They are also out injured.
The top four teams last season were Dynamos, ZPC Kariba, Capes United and FC Platinum. But will the situation remain the same come the end of the season on December 18? That's the question soccer fans are asking. The first games this weekend will give us a rough idea of what to expect in the 10-month soccer program. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Thanks, Michael. And for our live talk, that's the topic there. Soccer, and more soccer. This weekend, that's when the PSL season is kicking off. And now to recap today's top stories. Opposition MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai says the United States should remove the sanctions it imposed against President Robert Mugabe. That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande, leaving you in the capable hands of Ntungamili Nkomo. Good night, Zimbabwe.